All right, y'all, it's spring, and you know what that means. It's time to start planning our summer festival traveling. Yep, it's time to get into my Airbnb bag cross-country, a.k.a. Time to visit my homes all across the country. And you know what I never think about? Why not list my own spot on Airbnb and host some folks at my house? I mean, my house is cute. Yes, let's make money while we're spending money. Just trying to help you out, man, because your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora.
Ladies and gentlemen, this experience with Jimmy Jam, talking with him for almost 6 hours, was such a dream come true. We never wanted it to end. This particular episode, we talk about working with Michael Jackson, a lot of career advice in running a record label, and a lot of... it's so much... Yo, too much information. We really hope you enjoyed this Jimmy Jam episode as much as we enjoyed doing it. All right, here it is. Part 3 of the QLS Classic interview with producer Jimmy Jam.
There's a question I have about Rhythm Nation, mm-hmm. which I often debate with Rebe's son, Michael's nephew, Austin.
Uh-huh.
About the effect, the crippling effect that I feel the knowledge had on Michael Jackson, or just at least the first three songs of that record.
And, I love you know, that. I've I watched. Love this.
No, I
love this. I love where this is going.
I've watched a few interviews where he's mentioned in a kind of modest or way, like, oh, you know, Janis, but knowing what I know about his vocal style and what it became, I felt that what Control was for Prince, Rhythm Nation was for Michael, and to a crippling effect, because soon after, literally everything that he released post 1990 was him chasing those first three songs, Rhythm Nation, State of the World, and The Knowledge.
He told, like, Babyface that. Remember?
Well, no. I mean, do you know the Babyface story about when he first flew them to Neverland Ranch to work on the Dangerous record? Did he ever tell you the... So Babyface. So when they're working on Jermaine's You Said record, suddenly they get a call saying, I'm helicopter to Havenhurst. And when they first get there, they're like, well, so, you know, what do you like from us? Like, they're trying to figure out what he knows of theirs. Mm-hmm. And he says, well, I really, really like Rhythm Nation. Part of me actually feels like he was negging them. Yeah. Like, I think he's intelligent enough to read album credits to know the difference between L.A. and Babyface and Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. And, you know, they corrected him. It was like, well, you know we didn't do that, right? It's like, I know, but I still like it.
That's great.
So, yeah, it's And it, again, it's like it. My favorite record of hers is Janet. I feel like the most important record was Control, but I feel like the most impactful was probably, at least with stylistically, and how it affected Michael. I mean, if, when you make Michael Jackson's paradigm shift, then that says something. And I always felt as though that record crippled him in ways that he's never recovered. Like, every song was like that 16th note, like off the one. Like, everything was that. Like, what was... Was there any feedback from him whatsoever? Or was it, like, in her head, like, yeah, it's really going to fuck him up now? Like...
There was Janet. Janet never had any sort
she
of.
She was never competitive.
She was competitive, but not towards him in any way. She never had anything that I ever sensed or that she ever said that was in any way like I'm going to show Michael on this one or anything like that. There was never anything like that. Her respect for him was way beyond any sort of competitiveness with him. He was competitive toward her. I will say that, because I can tell
you. That means you guys are doing your job.
I can tell you the whole Scream story that was that. But interestingly enough, yes, the knowledge. I have a handwritten note from Michael that talks about the bridge and the knowledge and the sound that's on there, and can we do something that sounds like that on the bridge of our song. He had taped it to my keyboard because I wasn't there. He taped it to my keyboard. And I still have that.
You still have that note, right?
It's in my briefcase.
Does he print or write in cursive? I'm sorry. I just need to know.
This was cursive. Print. Okay. No, this was print, I believe.
What?
I think this was print.
Because he has immaculate cursive.
I'll have to. You know what? I never. Actually, honestly, I didn't pay attention. Maybe it is cursive. I don't know. I didn't pay attention. I just saw the note. It just said, Jimmy Jam, can we use the sound that's whatever that sound is in the knowledge. But I actually got, it was funny because when we were working with Michael on that History album, and I remember him being obsessed with If, and he really liked If, and I remember saying, no, I said, yeah, If is cool, Michael. I said, I don't know. I said, you know, That's the Way Love Goes was a much bigger record. It was? And I said, yeah. I said, That's the Way Love Goes. It was like number one for 8 weeks or something. I said, you know, If was like top five. I said, but it wasn't. He said, no, I really like that If. And it's like, no.
He likes that brace yourself, second stadium.
Yes.
Sizzle. Like, yeah. And that's what, like, Rhythm Nation was probably the first stadium black album. Because even with Bad, just that intro. Mm-hmm. Maybe the way you make me feel, like, it didn't have a grandiose intro of every, like, every song was stadium ready.
Yeah.
For Rhythm Nation.
Yeah. No, he definitely liked, I mean, he told us how much he loved it. And,
why did he never ask you guys to produce his records?
Well, we did. We ended up doing songs on,
91.
But after the fact. Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, first of all, the records he made with Quincy Jones to me were the greatest records ever. So I was like, I didn't even really want to work with Michael, quite honestly. If he wouldn't have asked to do the Janet duet, you know, we probably never would have worked with him. That's the reason we worked with him. And it was interesting because I remember Michael called, I'm trying to think where his folks called, our folks or whatever, say Michael wants to do a song as a duet with Janet, and my first thought was,
nope,
I'm calling, no, it wasn't no, my first thought was, I'm going to call Janet and see, is she cool, is she aware with, you know, of this, and then my biggest thing was, I feel as a producer and also her friend and confidant, I'm there to protect her, and I want to make sure that whatever the process is that's happening, that she's protected at all times. And when I say that, it was interesting what you just said about Michael and kind of his, you know, his story with LA and Babyface when he said, I really like Rhythm Nation. That's hilarious to me because I remember when we were doing Scream, and I remember I told Janet to come to Minneapolis while we were doing the tracks, because Michael said, just put together some tracks and we'll figure it out what it is. And I remember we put a bunch of tracks together, and then we just kind of said, okay, I said, Janet, you need to just sit here. I just need your inspiration, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember when we did the track that ended up being Scream, I remember Janet said, that's the one he's going to like. And I said, how do you know? And she said, because I know my brother. And I said, okay. So, but the song she really liked and the song that we liked was ended up becoming Runaway. Because,
oh, wow.
Yeah, because
he could have Runaway?
Yeah. We thought that that was.
Yo.
Yeah, we thought that was the record.
Yo, he could have killed that shit.
Right. That's what we thought.
Yeah, man. What?
So when we did. Yeah, so when
I
we
hear
did.
It now.
So when we did Runaway.
Have a good time.
Wow.
When we did Runaway, it was funny. And we didn't know it was going to be called Runaway. I mean, obviously, that the song didn't exist. It was just a track. But when we did the track, we just were like, wow, this feels so nice. This is so cool, right? And so she said, I remember she said, put it on the cassette, but I hope he doesn't like it. Because I want it for me. And I said, okay, cool. So sure enough, we played the songs. We went to the Hit Factory. We flew to New York, went to Hit Factory. He blasted these songs super loud.
Yeah.
And then he would say, yeah, that sounds really good. Can I hear number two again, please? Okay, so they'd play number two, and they'd played a couple other ones. And then he goes, okay, I think we're going to go with number two. I really like number two. And number two ended up being Scream.
Mm-hmm.
And Janet looked at me like, I told you so, but also like, I'm glad he didn't pick the other one. So anyway, so the next day we went to, ironically, Trump Tower, where he had, where Michael had his penthouse and stuff. And Michael already had conceptually what he wanted. He wanted a record that lashed out at the press and everybody that doubted him or was critical of him. And that's why that track worked so well, because for him it was the aggressiveness of doing that.
Whose idea was fucking?
I honestly don't remember. I don't remember whether he said that as we were recording it, or if I don't think we suggested it, because I don't think we would ever.
I was about to say, did you write the word "stop fucking with me"?
No, it stopped pressuring me. But he wrote the lyrics on that. We didn't write the lyrics on Scream.
Okay,
that was totally his thing. And even as he was writing the lyrics, we were like, okay, yeah, we get that.
Oh,
but why would you want to drudge up any animosity toward the press or anybody at this point? Because right now, he was at a really happy point of his life. He had just, I don't know whether, I think him and Lisa Marie had just gotten married.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a happy guy. Lisa couldn't have been nicer. You know, it was funny because I remember we asked Lisa, we said, what did you see in Michael? You know, how did you guys fall in love? And she just said, he was the kindest person I've ever met in my life. And I totally got it. I was like, I get it. Totally get it. And I thought, now's the opportunity to, you know, if it was the Runaway track, or we had heard the R. Kelly track, the You Are Not Alone, and we were like, that should be the single to me. It's like, that's where you're at in your life right now. Why go back and go pressure
like
me?
Heat,
and,
that 30 and all seconds, that? I got to get the last word.
He's got to get the last word. And that was the thing. And we told Sony, it wasn't even Sony at the time. I think it was still CBS Records at the time, but we told him. We said, that's the wrong record for the first single. To me, also, I said, just strategically, if everybody wants that duet, why give it to him at first? Give him something different. I said, he's never given the home run
single
record as
right
the first one.
You're
he
right
never has.
Yeah. The throwaway song should have been first, and then...
Yes.
Damn.
Well, not even a throwaway
song.
Because
The Girl Is Mine was the first one on Thriller.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, but that was my thing was, You Are Not Alone. I said, you just got married to Lisa Marie. You're in love. We had already done the love thing with Janet, right? We knew That's the Way Love Goes was the song for that album. It said what the album was. The album was not, we argued with the record company over that. They wanted it for the single. And we're like, no, but If is like the last of Rhythm Nation, but remember, the last impression you had of Janet was Love Will Never Do Without You.
Right.
So going from that to That's the Way Love Goes is right. the next Makes logical sense. Step. And they almost talked her out of it. Thank God for Chuck D and Hank Shockley, who we played the record for, and they told us, yeah, that If is cool, but that's the way love goes, man. It's like some Sade shit, man.
She wanted to. Oh, okay.
No, I'll tell you what. I can real. Well, hopefully, real quick, I can tell you what happened. We had finished the whole album. We were the last song we did was not State of the World, but New Agenda.
Ah, wow.
With Chuck D.
With
right?
Chuck, yeah.
Right. So we're finishing up. We finished at like 3 a.m. When Janet had left for about 2 or 3 days to meet with Virgin about, you know, whatever. And of course, now we're in a climate of biggest recording deal ever, ton of pressure and whatever. When Jordan Harris and Jeff Aroff, who were the two guys that were running Virgin, when we were working on the album, they came to town one day and they said, we just want to hear whatever you're working on. That particular day, we were working on If. Crank that up. I turned it on. They were blown away. They left. They said, we don't need to hear anything else. We're good. Right? So in their minds, from that day forward, If was the single because that's what they heard. Mm-hmm. And it was so straight down the middle Janet from what Janet was on Rhythm Nation. They hadn't heard any of the other songs, didn't know any of the concepts. So That's the Way Love Goes had a long kind of, you know, life because... in creating the song. Because when I did the song, I was like, my whole thing was, first of all, I'm the biggest James Brown fan ever, right? Papa Don't Take No Mess was one of my favorite songs. I said, if I could take Papa Don't Take No Mess, put chords over it like a real song, and chord changes and stuff, and make it all still work with the thing, if I could put the Impeach the President sample in it... I was trying to make like the ultimate hip hop, you know, like a record Mary J. Blige would make was mm-hmm. what I was trying to make on that record, right? But with the texture that Janet would sing on, right? And I remember there was this guy named Mark Mazzetti used to work at A&M Records, and Mark Mazzetti,
nothing Fonte,
no, Mark Mazzetti stories.
No, okay, so so Mark came up, you know, she was on Virgin, but he came up and he said, hey, I know she's not on our label. Can I hear something you're working on? And I said, oh yeah. Well, I just finished this track, and I played him the That's the Way Love Goes track, and he went crazy. He said, oh my god, this is the greatest. Oh my god, I wish I was working this record. Whatever. Anyway, played it for Janet. Janet goes, hey, it's okay.
What?
And I said, wow. I said, oh, really? She said, yeah, it's okay. So anyway, I said, okay, cool. So then about, you know, a couple weeks later, we were taking a break over Christmas. And she said, just put everything on a cassette for me to listen to. I said, okay, cool. So I put the track on the cassette, right? When she got back a couple of weeks later, she landed. I said, what song do you want to start with? She said, oh, my God, that track. That track, oh my God. And I said, what track are you talking about? That track you gave me, oh my God, the track you gave me. I said, the one you don't like? Oh my, I love that track. Oh my God, we listened to it over and over and over. So something about, she was in Anguilla. So something about being in Anguilla on the beach and whatever, and something about it connected. And I think what also happened, she was over there with a bunch of her dancers and stuff. Mm. And I think they all heard it.
Yeah.
And were like, kind of like what they did in the video. That's what I think kind of happened over there. So when that happened,
Was she chilling with Booyah Tribe too? Or
and J-Lo?
No, they weren't.
It was rather random.
Not actually. But yeah, but that was sort of the idea. So anyway, we actually did the song, and we all agreed that was sort of the direction of the album. Like that was the first, you know, kind of entree of what the album was going to be. When she went to L.A., we warned her. We said, they're going to try to talk you into If. I already know it. And she said, no, If's cool, but, you know, what a second single maybe, whatever. I said, okay, cool. She comes back. She goes, yeah, the single changed to If. And we were like, no.
Don't fall for the okie doke.
don't, and they were like, and she told me all the reasons, oh, we can do a big dance video and it's Janet Returns and it's whatever, and we're like, no, but we know that's
we've
not
seen
what
that
we
already.
Want we
that
know that's
would have
not
changed
what
my
do.
Whole perspective of that record had
right
If came out first.
Yeah, so anyway, so now, okay, so we fast forward, we're finishing New Agenda. So 3:00 in the morning, I said, Janet, I said, can we play them the two records we're thinking as singles? And she said, oh, yeah, that'd be great. I said, okay, cool. So we went into the studio. I played That's the Way Love Goes. And they listened to it, and they were, like, vibing. And we played If, and they were vibing. And we were like, okay, so what do you think? And they said, well, yeah, that If, man, that, you know, that just sounds like Janet, man. You know, that's that... You know, that's that Janet's back, and, you know, we get it, man. It's like, you know, it's like, and as he's saying that, I'm just going like, no.
Right.
And she's looking at me like, Janet's looking at me like, mm-hmm, see, you know, whatever. And I'm like, damn. And then they go, but, what was that other song called? That's the Way Love Goes. That other song. You know what that song's like? That's like some Sade shit. That's like when Sade puts a record out, you know, and it is no fanfare to it. It's just like she's just got the CD and she just kind of slips it down on the table and you go, oh, what is that? Oh, it's a Sade record. Let's check that out. You know, he said, that's like that shit. And he said, that's something about that. And I looked at her like, mm-hmm. And that was it. And that was, so the decision was made. And thank God they were there and said that. Because then she said, she like came back to her senses and she said, okay, yeah, That's the Way Love Goes is a single. And yeah, it changed the whole direction of what the record would have been. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of things like that that happen, man. It's like we can sit here and talk. We ain't even got to damn 2000, have we? Which, by the way, everybody clowned us about the length of the Red Bull interview that we did,
whatever that was.
Yeah, whatever that is. And it was funny because I said, yeah, but you know the problem is that you can really pick an era and spend a couple hours talking about it if you want to go in depth with it. It's tough to really do it because I said we've just been around too damn long. That's the problem. And there's a story that leads to another story that leads to another story, but there's so many angles of things of the way they turned out. At the end of the day, I say about all of this, it's God that does this, flows through us. Luckily, we've got the blessing to actually do it. But I guarantee you, there's chord changes in songs. We were talking about, somebody asked me the other day about Come Back to Me, the bridge in Come Back to Me.
It's the same as Money Can't Buy You Love.
That's Money Can't Buy You Love? Oh, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Wait a minute.
You win.
Yeah, you're sort of, well, you're right. I mean, you're right. There are the same chords in there. Absolutely the same chords. But I don't know where those chords came from. Right? Because when I was doing Come Back to Me, the track for that is not where I would go for a change. Like if somebody said, oh, we need a B section. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have gone to that. You know? And even sometime today, you know, if somebody says, hey, play such and such and such, I love the change in that song. And I can't remember what it was. We were with Bruno Mars the other day, who, by the way, can sing every damn song we've ever done. And really well, which is something. But we were doing, I don't know whether it was Come Back to Me or one of the others. It might have been a Bended Knee or something. And he was singing. And he went to the change, and I'm like going, oh, wait, I don't, what was I thinking that day? I don't even know. But it was whatever was planted in me that day that made me come up with those changes. So at the end of the day, man, it's just, you know, it's just a blessing. And I get to do it with somebody who I love to see every single day. And, but there's so many twists and turns that it you can't really get stuck on yourself about it. Because there's so many other factors, man. Like if Chuck D wouldn't have been in our life and Hank Shockley wouldn't have been in our life at that moment, it would have taken a different turn. And that's stuff we can't control, you know. So there's a lot of good fortune that happens.
What's your day-to-day like now? Like, in terms of you and Terry writing songs, like, what's a typical day like in your life?
Wow. Well, a typical day in our life is a lot of family kid raising, quite honestly. We have, our kids go to the same school.
How old are your kids now?
I have 16-year-old twins, and he has a 16-year-old son.
Okay.
But he has a 36-year-old son. You know, he's, you know, Terry's been getting busy early. For a while. Yeah.
Ain't nobody bad.
Sorry.
But Terry taught me everything that I know about parenting, and he's like the most unselfish giving person ever in life. And so I got a chance to watch him raise his kids. And then I had mine, but then he remarried and had more kids, you know, because he just, he's the kind of person that should have kids. And he always said that to me, because I went through most of my life, I figured I was never going to have kids. I didn't want kids. And he said, Jam, you know, you have to have kids. And I'm like, why? And he said, because you have so much to offer.
Yes, you do.
And he says, and somebody's got to offset all the knucklehead kids that's out there. So you need to raise some good kids so we kind of have some balance. And I thought, okay, yeah, he's absolutely right. And I always feel like with my kids, it's like, y'all better do something with your life, because there's no excuse.
There's no excuse.
You know?
Man, talk that shit.
So
yeah.
So that's the thing. So anyway, a lot of our life is being Uber, driving kids to school and back. My daughter just got her license, so that's scary. She's 16.
Mm-hmm.
I have an older son at Arizona State University. And he's, I think, going to transfer at the end of the year maybe, but we'll see, whatever he wants to do. But, I mean, a lot of it is just spending kids' time. The nice thing is I wake up, and now the way studios are, you know, studios in your laptop now.
Right.
So I have an office at home, and anytime I come up with an idea, and thank goodness the ideas just keep coming for some reason, and I can just walk over to my laptop, and I have my little keyboard and stuff, and I can just bang an idea out. And sometimes I don't even develop it. I just kind of put a little idea down, and I just kind of leave it. And then what happens most of the time is Terry will take my hard drive, and he'll say, hey, Jam, let me get something off your hard drive. Okay, cool. He'll go through, listen to everything. And the next thing you know, we just did a Peebo Bryson album.
Wow.
And he pulled some songs off of my hard drive that I swear to God, we never talked about how we worked together, but this is one example. So he said, man, we need some stuff for Peebo, man, but I want it to be like R&B, but it's got to be forward. You know, it's got to be whatever, whatever. And it's like, okay, cool. He said, you got anything like that? And I said, nah, I ain't got anything like that. I said, but I'll figure something out. So anyway, he takes my hard drive. He goes down to Atlanta. He records Peebo. He comes back. Two songs that I had done, I don't know, 5 years ago or something, just as kind of a thing. One of them I was singing on, which was pretty bad. And anyway, he's got Peebo on these songs. These are like probably our singles on the album. But he hears it and he goes, I mean, one of them he played for people and people like lost his mind. He said, oh my God, I love this. And so Terry's like, okay, yeah, you know. So sometimes it just happens like that, but that's the great thing about having a partner, you know. Even we talked about a little bit earlier, what have you done for me lately? Mm-hmm. So Terry walked in the studio when I was cutting the track, and the part that ended up being used was actually the bridge to the song. It was like a whole different song.
Wait, what?
What?
It was a whole different song. But the bridge went...
So what was your main?
I don't even remember now. I don't even remember what the main part of the song is. I just know Terry walked in and he said, oh, I like that. Dun, dun, dun. I like that. And I said, oh, no, that's just the bridge of the song, Terry. The real song goes like this. And
he's
said,
like,
nah. No,
no, no.
Just goes just right to that bridge.
You know what he told you, right?
Jim, hit the out.
So I have a question. Have you ever had to deal with writer's block, or does having a partner kind of prevent that from happening?
It helps. It helps a lot, because normally we don't have it at the same time. But yeah, you definitely go through writer's block. You go through, I mean, we've done it so long now that we've gone through a ton of periods where we just thought, oh, we're never ever going to write another song again. It's just, it just ain't there. Terry went through it for a while, and I remember, though, it was because the stuff that was being offered us to do was not inspiring. And
who did you say no to?
Oh, many people. Many people.
Everyone? Not everyone. But
Stevie Wonder?
Huh?
Stevie Wonder?
No, we never said
who
no.
Who did you say no to that no you to felt didn't make sense to do? Like, did Prince come to you guys one day and, like, you guys got something? Or, I mean, like...
No, we actually...
Michael Jackson situation. Like...
Well, I mean, early on...
Madonna?
Lionel Richie. At one point in time. I mean, in the Lionel Richie
And you didn't
Richie
think
heyday.
It made sense?
No, because he wanted one song, and we wanted to do more than one song. We didn't feel
what
like
year?
We could do... Initially, right around that, or right after that, probably right after Dancing on the Ceiling, or right around that time. Yeah, I mean, he was huge, but we just didn't feel like we were going to make an impact with one song. We didn't. When we thought of him, we didn't think of him as one song. We thought of him as the Commodores, Lionel Richie.
An album.
We thought of him as the the kind of new Lionel Richie.
Yeah.
Oh, we did. You know, but we did though. We did an album with him that did absolutely nothing.
What?
Wait, are you okay? Was it louder than words?
We stumped Red Headphone Man.
This is louder than words,
wait,
right?
Wait, Fonte,
that's
you don't
happened
know about
a few
this?
Times.
Wait, tonight. I don't know about this.
I know about this.
Louder than words, right?
Louder than words? Yeah, great cover. Yeah, that's right.
You did the entire album?
No. But we did the good songs on there.
Which one?
So don't want to lose you.
Okay.
You got that?
That was a single.
On
right?
your laptop of songs?
Look.
So Don't Want to Lose You Now. We did a song called Say I Do, which he actually got married to when he got married.
Oh, wow.
I Do. And we did a song that one of my favorites called Take You Down that we actually sampled, I think it was...
What's the name of the
Ecstasy
album?
By the Ohio Players.
Ohio Players. Oh,
wait,
wow.
What album is this called?
I think it's called Louder Than Words. Yeah, Louder Than Words.
What year was this, like 96?
Oh my God, so many 96? Records. So here's
the funny thing about Lionel is that when he finally did come to us and we said, no, we want to do more than one song, and he said, okay, cool. He said, I get it, whatever. I'll come to Minneapolis. It was a whole different Lionel at that point, right? I'll come to Minneapolis. I'll work with you guys, whatever you guys want to do. We said, hey, we miss the Lionel, the Commodores Lionel. Can we do a Commodores Lionel song? And he said, yeah. He said, absolutely, we got it. And so I remember when we played it for him, and I think I had sung the demo, which not very good. And he started cracking up. He just laughed, and I said, yeah, I know I don't sing really good. And he said, no, man, it ain't that. He said, what's weird about it is that is so me, but I can't write that song. You guys can write it. I can't write that song anymore. But the fact that y'all wrote that for me, he said, I'm totally with it. So anyway, that album got caught up with, I remember a record company thing with, I think it was PolyGram at the time. And it just kind of got caught up in a bunch of crap. And we actually played with him at the PolyGram convention.
Oh, okay.
So that was cool. But, you know, I mean, that for me, the greatest compliment that we get is when we got a chance to work with the classic artists, the people like we grew up with, when we got to work with Barry White, Barry White was the best. We played a song for Barry White. We did the song called Come On for Barry White. And, you know, we did the whole big long Love Unlimited intro and the whole big thing, right? And we said, when it got done, we said, hey, what do you think, man? And he said, ha, ha, ha. Sounds like me. And that's the best compliment. We did a song called You're All I Need for the Isley Brothers. And I remember Ernie was listening to it. And he said, hey, man, you got an acoustic guitar? And we were like, yeah. He said, man, hook me up. He said, I already know where this is going. I already know where the chord changes are going. And when you do that and you like somebody so much, but you can kind of get into their heads and make them feel like the song is for them. That's the best, man. Particularly with, you know, like I say, with the classic artists, because you have a chance to actually study and know. And as a fan, you know, just with anybody, you know where they went wrong, where they made the left turn. You just talked about it with Michael. He made a left turn at one point, and he got into Rhythm Nation land, and he never recovered. That was his left turn that he made. Or it can be any of your favorite artists. It's like, okay, they get to a certain point, then they make a left turn, and it's like, if you can just bring them back. Well, we worked with Earth, Wind, and Fire. We did a song called Pure Gold.
Pure Gold, yeah.
Right?
The Illumination album.
Okay, and that's the last record, by the way, that Maurice White sang on. And we insisted that he sing.
And that sounded like them. That was a great song.
But the point was, so Earth, Wind, and Fire comes to us, and they go, man, we want to get back on the radio. And we were like, you're on the radio all the time. Right. Reasons, that's the way of the right. world.
September.
Right? You're on the radio. No. We want to be on the radio. I said, no. So what does it tell you? That those songs are being played on the radio. So what does radio want to hear from Earth, Wind, and Fire? Those type of songs. And so we did Pure Gold, and, you know, it was a very popular record in the whole thing.
Yo, what's up? This is Fonsigolo from Team Supreme. Black representation in media is very important to me. I think it's important to have our stories told by people who look like us and who have shared in our common experiences. Some of my earliest influences were Donnie Simpson. I would also say Tom Joyner, Angela Stribling, Sherry Carter. They were just people who told our stories with a lot of class and dignity and were big inspirations to me. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcast, The Center Black Voices. It's NPR Noir. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Yeah, man. You guys have always kind of been like, I can call y'all like the Shang Tsung of music. Because like, y'all.
Mortal Kombat.
Okay, Shang Tsung
was the character who could morph into like any of the other characters. Because the record y'all did, Disrespectful for Mary J.
Yes.
I would have bet my firstborn child that Rich Harrison did that record.
Right. Yeah.
And
I love Rich Harrison.
Yeah, you know I mean, and love I was Rich just, Harrison, yeah. So I was just curious as to how you channeled that. Like, where does that come from? Like, in order to get it.
It comes from respect, of people like that, of Rich Harrison. I remember hearing, what was the record? A. Marie.
One Thing.
Yeah, One Thing.
No, not
talking
One Thing.
About.
No, the very first
oh,
one.
Oh, Why Don't We Fall
why
in
don't
Love?
We Fall in Love?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. So of records that changed my life as far as just appreciation of production and the songs and what, that was one of them. I mean, there's probably, I mean, I don't know. I've never, I always think about it, but then I never do it. But like, there's certain songs in my life.
She's gonna love to hear you say this, by the way.
Well, there's certain songs in my life that really changed. And I go back, I can go back way, way far, but I mean, I remember happening on to a Brenda Russell album.
Oh, shit.
Right, So Good, So, Right.
So Right, yes.
Okay, and yeah. Think It Over, and those songs on that, those major seventh chords on that record and the way it's put together, changed the way I wrote music. Totally, right? I can think of hearing, just trying to think of some that come to mind, Just a Touch of Love by Slave.
Slave, yeah.
Totally changed the way that drum, that Steve Arrington, with that little hiccuped hi-hat thing that, you know, ended up watching you and all that other stuff. But Just a Touch of Love was, man, that was such an amazing record. And her and Starlina Young's voice and that whole thing was just amazing, right? So there's certain records like that that just do that to me. And so, yeah, so the A. Marie record did that to me. That record was just like, come on. So, and the My Life album by Mary J. was like that. Like, I stopped everybody in the studio and made them listen to that album. Like, you gotta listen to this.
You
album.
Liked it?
I loved it.
That's loved crazy. It. That's the first day we met, by the way. Or at least that I remember.
I am.
Yeah, in D.C. Really?
Oh, loved it. Loved.
Not you?
I can believe that. I can see it.
Doesn't everybody know that?
Why, so hard to believe? Why wouldn't I like it?
Well, because
it was karaoke.
It broke so many rules. Like, we were, like, just that month of us being in the van and analyzing every record as we're going from gig to gig. When we got the My Life record, we were just dumbfounded because all we kept asking was, is this allowed?
Yeah, it's just named it.
Like, yeah, right. Is she allowed it? Now, if it were rappers singing over Everybody Loves the Sunshine, it'd be like, yes. Oh, okay, that's normal.
Right.
But we'd never heard a singer sing over breakbeats. And we didn't know how to feel about that record. Like, we were just like, we just kept asking. Well, soon thereafter, I was like, if you ask if this is allowed, then it must be classic.
Yeah. Right.
Because
yeah.
She started, because she was kind of on the What's the 411 remixes. That was kind of the dress rehearsal for My Life. Because that was when she started.
I know, but we just, I never thought, like, okay, I'm listening to Everybody Loves the Sunshine. She's just changing. Like, it was, I was so conflicted.
In the Curtis Mayfield shit, to Be Happy. Right?
Yeah, I was so conflicted that.
Oh, I love Be Happy.
That shit
man.
Was a jam, though.
But that's the thing, Jam, can you still listen to records and not listen to them clinically? I always ask these guys that, like, can you just listen to a record?
I'm numb. I analyze everything and.
Just hear the goodness of the emotion that he looks outside of the technicalities of the breakbeat, how many...
Sort of. That's a great question. I think I can. I definitely get the emotion of records. I was listening, ironically, there's a record by... There's a guy, like an EDM guy, like Porter Robinson. And I love his chord structures and his textures that he does. And there's a song he had out about 4 or 5 years ago. No, it wasn't even 4 or 5 years ago. It was maybe 2 or 3 years ago that I remember he played at Coachella. And it was the first time I'd taken my kids to Coachella. And I remember we walked into the tent and that song came on and my kids put their hands in the air. And I just was like, wow, this, because everybody was like, well, EDM is just kind of soulless and it's whatever. But it hit my kids. And I actually put a little snippet of it. I sent it to my kids today because we're going to Coachella tomorrow. And I sent them that little snippet, and they both, like, sent me back a bunch of smiley faces because there was this moment where, and I never have analyzed that song because I'm not an EDM. I don't really do EDM. But that song, yes, the emotion in that song, there was no, I didn't have a desire to try to dissect it.
Right.
I just, something about it all, and it could have been the moment or because I was with my kids or because it was a shared experience or whatever. But, yeah, I don't. I think I probably can listen to things without doing it. The thing that is I don't like is when I can hear the plan that somebody had for the song. That bugs me. If a song is put together really well, it's all like a magic trick or something. Like if a magic trick is done really well.
You don't see the magic.
You don't see the magic. It's just like, oh, shit, wow, that was cool. But if you know what it is, what they're trying to do, and some songs are so, I'm going to push a button here to try to get this emotion out, and then I'm going to do this here because, and I'm going to use this sound here because it reminds people of this here, and it's almost like a laboratory.
Yeah, as like I said, I've never been inspired by inspirational music, ever. Like, anyone that says, like,
be like optimistic, you can win.
I mean, optimistic. No, that's that wasn't, that was a song that was inspirational, but it wasn't like, I'm going to try to inspire you. Like, a lot of, like, I don't want to say Christian music, but music that seeks to, like, be, like, self-help books in music form. I hate that shit.
Wow.
How do you really feel about that?
Tell them why you mess.
So how well-rounded are you? How well-rounded are your kids with music? Or do you leave them to their own devices?
No,
or do they school you?
All of that. All of the above, and all in different ways. I mean, I'm around my 16-year-olds all the time. My older one, I remember his most influential phase of music before he kind of, I won't say matured, but I guess matured is the right word. Mm-hmm. Anything that Lil Jon did, where it was a loop of a synthesizer, low and then high. Mm-hmm. So if it was Snap Your Fingers, it was every song had that same pattern. He loved all those songs, right? And he eventually got, he's interesting now. He's much more of an EDM guy now. He's into all the EDM stuff.
So, I mean, what did they think of what your life was? Like, do they understand that, yo, I know y'all see me as dad, but
I'm the shit. I'm
kind of that nigga.
Motherfuckers was talking trash to Jimmy Jam. Like, what do they think of when they see?
No, they don't. They don't. They have no.
They don't get it?
No, not at all.
The time means nothing to them?
Well, no, they enjoyed the time. Now, it was interesting. When we
was that
did,
before or after the Rihanna performance?
No, after the Rihanna performance, we did, because the time didn't exist, because we didn't really, my kids weren't born until 96. We did, my first one was 96. The twins were 2000, so we didn't do the, we had done the Pandemonium album at, what, 90?
Yeah.
But we hadn't done another album since then. So they didn't really know the time. So it was just, a band I used to play with, but they had no, thought about what
reference
it was.
Or...
Yeah, no reference. I remember the first time I took, we did a song with Sting called My Funny Friend and Me. It was from a Disney movie. I can't remember what it's called now. And at the end of the premiere of the movie, they raised the curtain and we actually performed with Sting. And I remember my son, who was probably 4 at the time, he loved it. Like, he thought that was so cool that I was, but he didn't know who Sting was. He just thought that it was cool that after this movie, there was a band on stage, right? Eventually he got it, and he went with us, like, to Janet, like, because he was old enough. I mean, he was, 5, I think, when Janet did, or 6, when Janet did the Velvet Rope, not Velvet Rope, but All For You tour.
Okay.
So we took him to Hawaii with us when we did the HBO thing and the whole thing.
She didn't take him to that chair, did she?
No, she had Kevin Garnett in the chair, though.
That's
that
right.
Was pretty
she did
cool.
It before Nicki Minaj.
Yeah, KG.
Yeah, she did it. She did it. So anyway, my younger boy is, he's everything. He's the Coachella sponge. Like, I took him, and he was everything. At that year was AC/DC. He loved AC/DC. He loved... Tyler the Creator. He loved
Chuck. Oh, I was going to say it was AC/DC. It was because of Rock Guitar.
Rock Band?
Rock
or
no,
Guitar Hero?
Guitar. I was wondering if it was because of Guitar. Because his kids are into metal.
Yeah, why do you know the songs? That's interesting. No, he always, for some reason, he always had a very big palette of he was always an old soul. Like, he would listen to Led Zeppelin, but I mean, he'd hear me play it, but then he'd go seek and find more stuff. That was always his thing. Like, he ended up liking the Black Keys because he liked Led Zeppelin, and then he, and he would make the connections on stuff. He was very, very much at an early age. Now he's 16. He's literally discovered now the Michael Jackson Off the Wall album now is his probably his favorite album of all time. He thinks sonically it's the best record ever made. And
you
he,
let him discover it?
Yes.
Or you forced it on him?
No. I let him discover it.
Wow.
I got in the car. It's funny. I got in the car the other day. So after the Grammys, we went to this one after party, AEG, the people that own the Staples Center and all that. We went to their party. They were playing all this kind of old school music. And they played Bad Mama Jamma. They played Knee Deep Funkadelic, right? He had never heard these songs in his life, right? He's asking me, Dad, who is this? And I said, oh, Bad Mama Jamma, Carl Carlton? Okay. Dad, who's this? Not just Knee Deep Funkadelic? Okay, cool. About 2 weeks later, I'm taking him to school. He's playing Funkadelic, but not Knee Deep. He's playing like
album cuts.
Album cuts, right? Bad Mama Jamma is like his favorite song ever. He's telling me how lyrically, what's the lyric? There's a lyric in the song that he looks loves. Like,
sexy, oh, sassy, yeah. Old.
What is it? What is the line? Yes. The look at her anatomy line, whatever that line is.
Poetry, emotion, feeling, I get so excited feeling her anatomy.
Yeah.
She's built. Yeah. She's stacked.
Yeah. He loved that. He said, man, those are great lyrics. I'm like, okay, cool. So he loves that. He loves the, like I say, he's into the Michael Jackson thing. The other day he found Heat Wave.
He said,
Dad, doesn't this sound just like Michael Jackson's song? I said, that's because Rod Temperton wrote it. So then he went on a Rod Temperton binge. Right? So he's that kid that...
He's following the threads.
Yes, he does. He's me. And I love that, right?
Yeah. He's me when I was
so,
a teenager.
And me too. I mean, I was the same way. So I see myself in him. So anyway, he's totally into that stuff. But after he gets through with that stuff, Travis Scott...
Lil Uzi Vert.
Big time. Uzi Vert is okay to him. He's really Travis Scott is his all time favorite. He likes Kanye a lot. He likes Drake a lot. He liked the early Weekend stuff, the mixtapes stuff. But he likes Sampha. He likes Little Dragon.
No Bruno Mars, huh?
No, he loves Bruno Mars.
Okay.
Oh, loves Bruno Mars. Oh no, he's got a very, like I say, he's got a very wide musical palette.
He sounds like my son. Yeah. My eight, who is also 16.
So Coachella is like perfect for him. Like he's gonna love it. Like he's already got his list of folks he wants to see: Schoolboy Q, Kendrick Lamar. He's got his folks that he's like,
and all his armbands.
Yeah, exactly.
One question I have for you was in regards to just like your We talk about all your hits, some of your misses, I guess, like, records that you've done that, you know, maybe didn't do what you want them to do and what you learned from. And like when you and Terry might sit back and say, you know what, that didn't really hit the mark. And this is why it didn't hit the mark.
That's a good question. I'm sure there's a lot of them. I don't think a lot about them, honestly.
Well, I mean, like a lead-off single that was expected to,
if I'm a
like the
Roger
Nay project or something, but like whatever, like.
Roger,
you told that.
Yo, I like Turn It Up.
No, that's good.
That was my joke.
I did like Turn It Up. It was on the Low Down Dirty Shame soundtrack. But
that's right. It was. So. No, listen, Rajane was good. I don't think it was great. Like, listening to it now, like, some things I go back and listen to and I go, man, that was really some great shit we did. Or, you know, at least I think that. And some things I go back and I listen to and I go, that's okay, but I would have done that different and I would have done that. Rajane is one of those records I probably would have done, you know, a little different than we did it. But also, we didn't have, at that point in time, we just didn't have the backup with the label, so... Maybe the record could have been better. I don't think it probably reached its potential, but I don't think we probably made the best record. And that's in all honesty. I mean, it happens a lot when records don't do it. I'll tell you one of the ones that was really surprising to me, but it had nothing to do with us, because I think it's a great record, is Got Till It's Gone by Janet. And what happened with that record was...
Wait.
It went straight to number one.
Something happened that we don't know about?
Well, it went straight to number one urban. Pop radio didn't touch it.
Oh, stalled it. Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
What?
Didn't touch it. Like it didn't exist, didn't touch it.
Not even with the no rap version.
Wait a minute.
And here's the thing that's interesting about it. We sensed that when we made it, because Janet had always straddled that line very carefully. I remember when we went to a marketing meeting at the end of the, toward the end of the Janet album, right? And we had already had, you know, That's the Way Love Goes, If, Again, Because of Love were the four singles, I think. And then so it was now, what is the fifth single going to be? And there was a cut on the album called Where Are You Now, which we thought would be a great single.
I used to hear it on the radio all the time before the album dropped.
That was the problem. It had already been played so much on the radio that they were scared that they couldn't get, you know, the DJs to do anything.
It charted on the airplay charts.
It charted, yeah. It was like a top, literally a top 10 record just on airplay. And so anyway, we went to this meeting and, you know, we're sitting in there and they have all their charts and their graphs and, you know, well, it's summertime, we should go up tempo, maybe we go with Throb, that would be a great one, and whatever. And they had all their graphs and all their stuff. And Janet had told us before we went in the meeting, and us at that time was myself and actually Renee, her second husband, I guess. So anyway, we had gone in there, and so she was waiting for us. She said, when you guys are done, we'll go eat. I'm like, okay, cool. So we called her, and we said, are you close? And she said, yeah. And I said, why don't you come in and listen to what these guys are saying? Because I know what you're thinking for the single, but they're not anywhere near it, right? And she said, okay, cool. So she comes in. And everybody gives their whole spiel and everything and, you know, whatever, 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 whatever. And this is why this, and it's up-tempo, and it's summer, and here's what we do, and blah, blah, blah. And Janet goes, well, I want to thank everybody very much for, obviously, everybody's put a lot of work into this, and I really appreciate that. And I think the next single should be Anytime, Anyplace. Room is silent. And somebody goes, yeah. Great, sure, okay, yeah. So, what do you think? Should we get a remix going, or who do you think we could do a good remix?
Wow,
that's what I said. Oh. Said I think R. Kelly could probably do a really good remix. And then they were like, "Oh, cool, okay, remix, okay, yeah, that's good." Yeah.
Okay. Is this also where the B side came in?
Huh?
Is this also where the B side came in?
On and on.
Yeah. On and
which
on, yeah.
is one of my favorite Janet
on
songs.
On and on, because we said, because their whole thing was, oh, concern, we don't have a tempo record in the summertime. We said, we'll just do a B-side. An up-tempo B-side.
The song like, starts out, oh, this yeah. is a song about summertime.
Right, exactly.
Let me just spell it out for you, motherfucker. Yeah, one of your records that I was surprised that, like, didn't go was, When I Need Somebody, the Ralph Tresvant.
Oh,
Tresvant.
Ralph Tresvant, yeah.
I thought that shit, I was like, man, this shit is sensitivity on steroids. I love this fucking
right.
song.
Yeah, but I like, loved Who's the Mac, too.
Thank you. I did, too. I loved Who's the Mac. It didn't connect.
I used to rock the instrument. I bought the single and used to rock the instrumental more than the vocal,
right.
to be honest. But
yeah. Well, we always saw Ralph as sort of a, you know, sort of a Marvin Gaye-ish type thing, so that was our attempt to kind of do that kind of Marvin Gaye, you know, kind of trouble man type, you know, cinematic thing. And, it did, you know, at the end of the day, it didn't work. When I Need Somebody, yeah, that kind of surprised me. But honestly, the label at that point in time wasn't in to Ralph at that point, just for a lot of reasons. And so we just kind of knew it was going to kind of fall flat at that yeah. point.
I still love that song.
How do you feel about the you executive produced the New Edition
movie. Dustin playing yeah. you and amazingly.
Yes, I agree.
Yes, big ups to Philly's own Dustin Felder.
How do you feel that now that a whole new generation has latched on and, you know, like my friends' kids are, you know, discovering this group and how do you...
I love it. I love it because to me that's what music really should be. It should connect us. It should connect generations. It should connect races. It should connect ethnicities, religions. It should do... That's what music is. It's the ultimate connector. And to me, it's the most divine art of all the arts. And the reason I say that is, name me something else that's... If I say to you, Questlove, where were you on this date in 1990? Do you know what you were doing?
I'm that Mary Lou Henner person that can you can name a date and I can tell you
oh,
where
really?
I was.
Okay.
I because music and Soul Train episodes like connect me to.
Ah, yes, but what's right? Because of the music.
Oh,
that's,
yeah.
That's my point.
I say this to my mom all the time, that it's my time machine. It's how I remember things. It's how I
it transports you. Yeah, yeah. It transports you. If I play you a song from the date, it transports you. You remember everything about it. And
smells and everything.
Yes.
Everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I can go back to like even because we talked about earlier what I grew up listening to, and it was like a bunch of pop music. But I can go back to like stuff like a Strawberry Alarm Clock or the Turtles or all these, right? And I remember they would play me the Turtles, Happy Together or whatever, and I remember the school bus taking me to a field trip and that kind of stuff. I mean, it's like it's all exists in your head. But you can't access it. What's the key that accesses it? Music. That's divine. There's no other explanation for that.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. 'Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
So, question, because you said earlier when we first started this interview, there's going to be a movie at some time, at some point. If we can't get through this story in 4 hours, how is there going to be a movie?
Miniseries. That's going to be the new Roots.
Now that certain unfortunate situations have occurred in the past year,
yes.
Where does that leave the original seven? In terms of being the time, in terms of doing the movie, or are you going to have to see when the smoke clears with estates and?
Yeah, I don't think we've even thought about it. I don't think it's been a thought.
It might as well be. I mean, you saw. If Steven were still at BT, I think it could be a possibility. It could have been a possibility, but.
No, we were joking, like, on the New Edition story. We were on Twitter joking, like, yo, if they did a Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis story, that shit could be a Netflix original.
It could be,
for like
13
episodes. 13
episodes.
Like, dead ass. That shit could be the new series.
That's how you do it. That's how you do it.
And I don't even consider it, like, it wouldn't even have to be chronological. I think if you just pick 13 experiences
like chapters
that are somewhere between 90 to 2 hours. I mean, people can handle it,
right?
Or an hour.
I'll say an hour. Yeah, that's
right. Fuck it. I mean, we're here for 9 hours.
Y'all seen Celia? I'm just saying.
Yeah, I feel like, yes, a 13 episode arc
that would be cool.
13 records
of Jam and Lewis, like, just that would be awesome. Okay, listen. We have to stop.
But wait.
Just grant us, because I know that look. I know you're being super polite. I appreciate you for granting us this five-hour interview. So look.
I just want to make sure we broke the record. I wanted to call
it. Oh, no.
We didn't
I just wanted to make sure.
You're good.
So look.
You're good.
Can we all just get one question each?
Oh, man. Okay.
One question each. Mine is rather short. And this goes back to 1982.
Okay.
Did you ever question the abrupt ending of I Don't Want to Leave You?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did you ever question that?
No.
Even really? Now you don't question it?
No, I remember it, but I don't question it.
Was that supposed to be something else or just...
Not that I know of, but I wasn't involved. Like I say, I wasn't involved in making the record, though, so I don't know. It's whatever it was.
But never like...
Hey, we'll never know. We're going to find the answer out, man.
I think the leader on the tape came up, and that was the
I
end
wasted
of it,
my
that
question.
Was
it. Who's next?
Boss Bill. Next.
Boss Bill.
A few years ago, there was a project you guys announced called the Jam and Lewis Project. I guess it was going to be the solo record. Is that still happening?
Yes.
And what's this, the latest on that?
Okay, so the latest is the project is pretty. You know, we've been working on this project. You could say since the Secret album, we always thought it would be great to do our own album, but we never put aside the time to do it. Like, we would always try to kind of do it in between other things, and we felt like we were kind of selling ourselves short, because you'd always clear the decks for a project and do it. And as a matter of fact, when we did Unbreakable, that time period was when we were going to really finish the Jam and Lewis record, but we put it aside to do Unbreakable because that was the right thing to do. So, we are pretty much recorded and actually had already mixed the record, but the technology we used to mix, we're using the surround technology to mix the record, and we are going to go with a different technology now to do it, because it's been developed now that we've waited another couple of years. The songs won't be dated because the songs are all...
Jam and Lewis.
Well, yeah, I mean, really? They're just, they don't have an expiration date. They're not trendy. There's nothing trendy about any of the songs.
Babyface had actually said that you guys had a couple of songs that you produced on him.
We did.
Are some of those going to be included?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And the thing is about it is that I think conceptually the album is simply artists that we really like doing the songs we want to hear them do. Okay. So Babyface is a great example of, I will say without,
spoiler alert.
Well, not even a spoiler alert. I'm not a brag guy or boast guy or anything like that, but I will say I will say the Babyface records, the Babyface record, cause it's just going to be one you'll hear. The Babyface record you hear will be the best Babyface record you've heard since whatever your favorite Babyface record
I love you, babe.
Was. Yeah. whatever was your favorite Babyface record. And I will say that about all the artists on there. Tony Braxton, it will be the best Tony Braxton record you've heard.
It's
your
jacking.
Favorite one. Mary J. Blige will be your favorite Mary J. Blige record you've heard. Usher record will be the favorite Usher record you've heard. Mariah record will be the best Mariah record you heard. Janet record will be the best Janet record you heard. And we even go back to Alexander O'Neal and Sherelle.
Oh, wow.
SOS Band.
Wow.
So these are all new songs?
Morris Day.
Or newly recorded songs?
They are all
or unreleased.
Timeless songs,
okay.
We will say.
Gotcha.
What equipment are you?
Whose origins have, started at some point, but are finishing now.
Gotcha.
You know, some of them been, you know, I'll give you one example. So the Alexander O'Neal song, we did this song as, the idea of the song was a follow-up to Saturday Love. Alex sang his part. Sherelle never sang hers until 6 months ago.
Wow.
Say what? Wait.
Wow.
So nice.
87 Alexander O'Neal is duetting with 2017 Sherelle.
There you go. Wow. And therein lies the beauty of what the record is. Because
do the months.
Yeah, so sometimes that's just the way that things happen. And, you know, and the technology allows us, obviously, to take, you know, we have stuff all on tape, and we have analog tape and all that stuff. And, of course, we digitize it and make it sound a little better, so it sounds good. But then the other piece of it is a technological piece, which is just as you could do with a Blu-ray movie, right, where you're listening to like the director's commentary if you want to listen to it in that way, the way the record is made. We're doing that on this record.
The way I'll listen to it.
Yeah. So we're doing that on this record. So the commentary of the artists, ourselves, the engineer, whatever, and we talk about the choices we make and so on and so forth. So if you want to listen to it like that, you can. Otherwise, you can just listen to it as a regular album.
I can't wait for that.
Yeah. It's going to be pretty awesome.
And we think that and we think it does a few things. We think that and we're going to do it in volumes because we actually now when people got wind we were doing it, then people started coming to us and going, "Oh wait, why aren't I a part of it?" You know, that kind of thing. So now we have a Stokely record. I feel like DJ Khaled. When are the Stokely vocals coming?
We're the best.
When are the Stokely vocals coming? Yeah. So I mean, it's like that kind of thing. But
and you're going to call it the Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis.
It's just going to be. Yeah. Right now, it's just called Jam and Lewis Volume One. I think is what. Oh no, Jam and Lewis Project Volume One.
You know what Volume Two should be? Lewis and Jam. All right. Who's?
I go. I just a quick one. Mo Money soundtrack, the new style. Yeah, yeah. Was that something that you guys... Well, first off, is that you saying the new style? Is that you?
Yes.
Okay. And also, is that you...
Keep on.
...saying the blackness?
Yes.
Okay. I thought it was...
The blackness.
Did you guys ever do any more kind of club stuff like that? Or was that like going to be a side project or something? Was that just something y'all did for the movie?
Okay, so that was... We did a song with Janet that never came out called Beat Crazy. And one of the lines in the song, she said, "Control my mind." We just took that piece, and then we just looped it. And you hear it right at the beginning, yeah. Right? But it slowed down, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then the mine. She's just saying mine, mine, mine. And then we just built a track around it because they needed it for a scene in the movie. They needed a.
It was when they were dancing. Right? Nah, that was when they was in
the club scene.
They was dancing.
Yeah. They just needed. And so we just whipped it up. It was like literally a, I don't know, 2 hour whip this up, and that was it.
Oh wow!
Yeah. Next,
I gotta go. We talk about all the hits that you know are hits, straight up. Have you ever gotten tunes that like you kind of like, and they wind up being hits too?
Well, Saturday Love is definitely one of them. We talked about that one earlier.
You're trying to redhead stepchild Saturday Love, man.
No, I mean, I just never...
It's one of those things that's so simple, you just think like, no, this can't be it, but that's totally fucking
right,
it.
Right, right.
We're suckers.
Yeah. No, I'll take it. I love it. I get it now. I get it. I get it. I get why people liked it. No, we definitely have had some other ones like that. I'm just not recalling them, but we've definitely had some where... I hadn't really thought that much of them, but somebody said, "Oh man, that should be the single and whatever." And we're kind of like, "Okay," and then it actually did well.
Here's "If It Isn't Love."
We felt pretty good about "If It Isn't Love." I mean, most of the songs we feel good about. The funny thing is when people come up to me sometimes and they'll say, "Oh man, I love everything you did," and I go, "I don't even love everything I did."
You don't even know everything.
Not everything is good. It's just not. I mean, that's life. But I mean, you always have good intentions for stuff, but it doesn't always happen. I'll tell you the most excruciating record to make was there was a hit. Was Karen White Romantic.
Oh,
because
that was a number one hit, too.
Number one, yeah. But my question the whole time we were making the record is, why aren't L.A. and Babyface making this record?
It does kind of sound like a L.A. and Babyface
totally,
record.
Totally does. I tried to make the record they would have made. Yeah. That was the idea. That was excruciating. And Terry was married to her.
Right.
Man, that was tough, and nothing against Karen, but man, that was just an excruciating record, a project. It just was because it was a record that was an example of a project that I didn't feel we should be doing. You know, right. I kind of felt like why aren't Ellie and Babyface doing the project? You know, and for whatever reason they weren't doing it. But it was funny because I felt that way about another project, and that was when we did with Mary J. We did "Love Is All We Need" and everything. And I remember
they do everything, that's right.
Yeah, and I remember when Mary came to Minneapolis and we played her stuff, and it was the stuff we were playing her I thought was like really good. But it was assuming that she was working with Puffy. So we weren't playing her any sample stuff. It was just like this different kind of stuff. And she was like, yeah, it's okay, that's okay, that's okay, that's okay. And we said, well, what are you looking for? And she said, you know, something that sounds like me. And we're like, okay, well, here, listen to this. She said, something that sounds like me. And I said, like what? And she said, you know, like my life, like, you know, like that kind of vibe. And we were like, oh, but isn't Puffy doing those kind of records on you? And she said, I'm not working with Puffy. And we said, oh, okay. Well, in that case, and we put on the track, The Love Is All We Need. And then instantly that track came on. And she got up and started dancing. And she said, oh, yeah, this is it. This is it right here. This is it. And wow. I was like, oh, you like that? Okay, well, we got this other one. And she was like, oh, yeah, this is it. And we've been good ever since. So
y'all did Beautiful for her too, though, right?
Yes.
Y'all did Beautiful.
Yeah,
that did Beautiful. I love that record.
Thank you.
I'm shocked that.
It was on the Stella soundtrack.
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
Beautiful was good.
I'm shocked that. You guys play pre-made work and the artists are with it. Because a lot of the time, I get resistance from people because they want it made in real time or to feel part of this immersive process.
Sure.
And not like, oh, okay, let's just pull some out the, you know, the woodwork. And
No. But we had done them for her. With her in mind, we just didn't think that's what she wanted. We thought, we just assumed... When they said, do you guys want to work with Mary J. Blige? I was like, yes and no. Because yes, because I'm her biggest fan. And no, because I'm her biggest fan. Like, I don't want to screw it up with her. I don't want to be the person that kills Mary J. Blige's career. Because she's coming off of My Life, which is one of my favorite records. So the way we approached it was like, well, if we were making a record with her, this Rick James sample would be dope. Mm-hmm. And this stylistic sample would be dope, but we know Puffy's already going to take care of that, so we're not going to do that. Right. But we just worked them up anyway. So they were ready, but they weren't off the shelf. We've never been off the shelf, guys, whatsoever. Never, 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 never. We always tailored everything to the artist. That was always very important to us to do.
Except with Peebo Bryson.
Peebo's Peebo.
Yeah, except for Peebo, yeah. No, but even that stuff is obviously tailored. Because that's one of those things where Terry knows what he's looking for. Because Terry was working intimately with people. I never did any vocals with people. Terry did that. And so Terry knew what he was looking for. And he heard it in the track. And the way he flipped the track was totally not what I was thinking for it. But it turned out real cool. You know, it's like okay, damn, that wasn't what I was hearing. And he actually took like my melodies and stuff and some stuff. But he just made it. Just fit, you know. At the end of the day, as long as it fits, that's the big thing. But you're right. Some people want to be involved. Some people just want you to hand them a record. I remember we worked with Keisha Cole, and I remember she came to the studio and she said, "Yeah," she says, "What am I? Play me something." And I was like, "No, we're gonna make up something right now." Huh? What do you mean? And I said, "No, we're gonna make up something right now. Like I'm gonna play some stuff. See whether you like this key. You like this key? Yeah, yeah." But what do we? But where's the track? It's like, no, we're gonna make the track right now. Like, you like
please and thank yous in there.
Like
you said, can you please? Thank you.
No, it was great, and we ended up doing a song. Oh my God, it's slipping my mind the name of the record, but it came out real cool. And at the end of it, she said, "That's the first time ever anybody's made a record like that with me, like just with me, just putting input into it and actually,
right.
You know, doing it. Usually, I just walk in and people play me a bunch of tracks, and that's what I do. And I'm like." We try not to do that. We try to create it. We might have something on standby that we think might work just to kind of jumpstart something if we ain't got something going, but nah, we like that, you know, tailor make it, you know.
Laya?
I was going to do really because I didn't want to keep us here longer. Okay, fine. I did want to know. Today, like, are there any songwriters, producers in this R&B field that you feel like, you know what? I feel like they're taking the baton. Like they
well,
move me. They...
That's a great question. Well, I don't. I feel like though. I think there's a bunch of batons, So I'm going to keep mine.
Right.
Good.
Keep yours.
But other people with a baton. Well, I mean, you know,
that are ready to receive when you're ready to hand.
I don't think I'm ever going to hand it. I think I'm going to go down with my baton. I don't. You know what? I think it's. I don't know what the word would be. I think in a way it's a little bit arrogant to think that we have a baton that we would hand to somebody anyway. Like, I don't even think of.
So then let me rearrange this question then. Is there anybody that moves you in a way that moves you today?
Tons of people.
That's making the music and not
there's a lot. There's a lot of people that I really like, but all for different reasons, in different ways. I mean, Bruno's top of my list. I think Bruno is. Bruno's interesting because Bruno, we actually helped Bruno with some of his grooves.
Yeah.
And we
for free.
Yeah, for free. No, I don't mean he borrowed them from us. I mean, we actually went into the studio with him and helped him with some stuff. Yeah. So
on the last record on 24K
on this
Magic?
On this one, yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, in fact that song.
Oh, wow.
Well, what we did for him is we got him out of a rut, okay? He tends to, I remember the first time we ever went to the studio, he played us this song, and I can't remember what it was, and he said he had been working on the bass part for 6 months. And he played it, and we were like, okay. He said, yeah, but something about that bass part, man. I've been dealing with this for about 6 months, man, and whatever. And Terry looked at me, and I just said, plug in the bass. He said, I plugged in the bass, and 30 minutes later, we had the bass line. And he said, oh, my God. He said, that's why I need y'all. And I said, that's easy. But I said, you're trying to recreate what we've already done. I said, so that's easy.
Trying to get y'all a producer for free.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, I think the intention was that we would actually do something. The thing that happened, though, honestly, was he is very meticulous. Like, he's somewhere between Prince and Michael, right? So Prince is one day. Like, okay, if a girl answers Don't Hang Up, for instance, on Vanity 6, that song was started and finished the same day. Like, right, you go and you play the bass, you know, Terry played the bass, Morse played the drums on that, or Prince played the drums? I can't remember. I think Prince might have played the drums on that. Anyway, I put a little keyboard part on, and he took my keyboard part off. Okay, fine. So you go through the whole day, you do the thing, he wrote it, he had the girls, I think the girls might have sang it on a different day, but the track's done. And there's no rethinking it or whatever. You just move right on to the next thing. The Michael Jackson way of working is you do the song, and at the end of the day, he would say, make me a dad. Okay. Next day we come back. What do you think, Michael? Can we turn the hand claps up a little bit? Sure. Okay, hand claps are up. We good? Yes, make me a dad. And that could go on for a week. And it's like, Michael, we're in the same place we've been. We're just turning the hand claps up. Are we good to go? Because we have other songs that we want to do, right? Bruno is somewhere between there, right? He's very spontaneous, but then he thinks it through to death. Now, at the end of the day, the end result is great. And the end result comes off very spontaneous. But all of Bruno's stuff is series of loops. But it's just done very well. Very subtly and very well. 24 Karat. He played it for us. He said, I don't know. He said, he knew it. He said, this is my single, 24 Karat. I got the video concept. I got this is my single. We said, okay. He said, the problem is that doesn't make me want to dance. I said, okay. What song makes you want to dance? And he said, well, I really like, I can't remember even what the songs he said. I said, okay, cool. I said, plug me in, right? So I just took the track and made it into a sound alike of a song he liked to dance to. And then we played it, and he said, oh, hell yeah. And he loved it, right? And he said, okay, I get it. Then he tried to put, like, the chords and stuff that he had before back in it. And I said, well, now you're just going back to what you already had. And he said, yeah, you're right. Okay, cool, right? 3-4 months later.
Dog chasing his tail.
24 Karat is done. He doesn't use what we did, but he took not so much what we did, but he took the inspiration or the idea of it, but figured out how to then incorporate what he wanted in the song, which were the little stabs and the little, you know, those kinds of little things like that. And, you know, so we didn't. So what we did is, I think we got him unstuck from the rut and got him to look at it in a different way. But we didn't technically, we didn't produce anything. So I think we were just more, I think as it turned out, just kind of a sounding board or whatever. And we did that for a few things for him. And that's fine. I enjoyed the process. He's amazing. I think he's probably my favorite dude. And he's, you know, he's obviously an artist, but I think he's one of the artists that in any era would be, he'd be good. He'd be a great artist in any era.
Did we have everything out of our system?
Steve didn't ask the question.
I mean, I still wanted to ask about
that. Oh, I'm sorry, Steve. I forgot about you.
Oh, yes.
Shocker.
You didn't forget about me. The two times I spoke tonight, you said, shut up. That's not forgetting about somebody. No, I have one question. Me and Bill Sherman over here, we recently started a singing group called The Sounds of Jewiness. And we could use a track or two. You know, like, just a track or two. Just whip it up.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
So, is it true? There's a rumor going around that between Control Album and Rhythm Nation, A&M wanted Janet to do an album with outside with producers other than you guys. Is that true?
That's impossible.
Well, there's some truth in it. She did go in the studio and make some records with some other folks.
I know she did something with Brian Loren.
Brian Loren. Yeah.
Oh, I was just guessing out my ass.
Yeah. But yeah, there was a little, I don't know what I would call it. There was a few bumps in the road between Control and Rhythm Nation for sure. And, but Clarence Avant solved that problem. Mentioned his name earlier about mm-hmm. 5 hours ago in the broadcast yesterday. It was one of those interesting things where, you know, Janet heard we were saying something about her and whatever, and we heard she was saying something about us and whatever. And she finally called me and she said, Jimmy, do you want to do the record? And I said, yeah. You want us to do the record? She said, yeah. And I said, okay, fine. And I called Clarence and I just said, Clarence, I said, we want to do the record, so can we get this done? And Clarence called up Jerry Moss and said, Jerry, give him $1 million and let's go. And that was it. And we were literally in the studio making Miss You Much, which was the first song we recorded on the Rhythm Nation album, like in the next week.
So the stories of songs like You Need Me, was that a leftover from the Rhythm Nation sessions or the period in between?
You Need Me. Okay, now refresh my memory. You Need Me ended up being a B-side. To Miss You Much. You Need Me was... During the... Wow, that's a great question. When did we record that?
Well, sounds like it's from the era, so...
Yeah, it definitely... I don't know. It's probably between Control... It definitely wasn't one of the Control songs that I think. So I think it was probably part of the Rhythm Nation.
So I was asking if it was like before Rhythm Nation actually officially started or...
That's a really good question. I'm gonna have to find that out myself. I truly don't remember.
And then like the other B-sides, like Skin Game, were those after the album was already done?
Yes. And Skin then, Game like, was after the album was done.
And one then, like, more 70s chance?
Love Groove and
24 Play.
Well, that was
for, that was the, for the design of a decade,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but, 70s Love Groove.
Those
were
all done after the albums were completed.
Yeah, 70s Love Groove. I remember we did that. That was a day. We did that in a day. And we just did a groove. And I said, just talk. And she said, okay.
How does that work, especially with the interludes and especially with the morphing? I mean, we always joke about the orgasms every album.
Yeah, right?
Except Unbreakable.
No, but, well, yeah.
Yeah.
But how hard or to go from... The shyness of Funny How Time Flies, which I'm sure was hard to do. Was the room completely empty? Like, how did you get that out of her?
Yeah, the room was completely empty. Like, all those, the vocals on all, I mean, I did all the vocals on those records, and the room was always dark, and we just, I don't know, trusted each other, I guess I would put it like that. But Janet would say, just the way she was, she would say things, and they would come out wrong. You know how... You say something and it comes out in a sexual way, or you can be, you know, it can be misconstrued as that.
Yes.
Janet would always do that. And even on the end of Oh, the end. Well, yeah. Funny how time flies. At the end of it, she's talking in French, right? Mm-hmm. And then she says, "One more time," in American. I don't know that you or in English. Yeah. You one hear that? Time?
Yep.
So one more time was her asking, "Did I want another take?"
But it sounded like, "Let's go one more time."
That's so I just left it.
You ever hear Marvin Gaye ask, "Do you have another J?"
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is that on the tape?
Yeah, it is, Marvin. Yeah.
So there's a lot of that kind of thing that goes on. But she, you know, she's an actress. She can put herself in the mood, for sure. And if the track is right, it's always, but it's about the vibe. My favorite one of those was, because I remember I totally shocked people, was...
Would You Mind?
Yes, Would You Mind? That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Would You Mind?
Thank you.
Would You Mind was... Would You Mind, and I'll tell you, the other great thing about Would You Mind was that Rock Wilder did that track. And I remember when we did, I gave, like, all the producers... We worked with a whole bunch of different producers on that record, but Rock Wilder was the only one that actually ended up making
that was the 20-year-old.
No, it was Demita Joe.
Demita Joe. Okay.
No, 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 no.
Velvet Rope.
All Velvet for Rope. You. No, it wasn't.
All for You.
It was All for You.
It was.
It was All for
was
You.
Was that the moment when all we for you. Won?
Yeah.
Was that?
Yes.
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 Okay.
Yeah. 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 All for You. And we did. What we did is we did like a kind of a camp. We called it Flight Time Summer Camp. We had a bunch of different producers come up. We put them in different rooms. Which kind of happens nowadays. It's funny. Everybody does a writing camp thing. So we did that. So we put everybody in the room. We said, let's see what you come up with. And I remember we liked what Rock Wilder had done with Missy and a couple other folks. And we were like, okay, we'll put you in the room. So then you say to him, okay, here's what we want. We love what you do. Don't do that. We want you to come up with something different specifically for Janet. And it's what a weird thing to ask somebody, right? And so I remember, and I said, okay, what do you need, man? And he says, I just need an MPC and a XP60. And I can't remember the other keyboard he had, but that was it. I think it was XP60. So I just need an XP60 with the Asian card and the something card. I didn't remember what he called it. There was two different kind of sound cards you could get. And he says, I just need these, right? And so I'm like, okay, cool. So these other producers, I'm not even going to mention names. These other producers are like bringing in orchestras, doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And one studio bringing Rodney. In black. No, it ain't.
It ain't Rodney.
No, it ain't Rodney. Gotcha. Black lights and fog machines and all kinds
not
of craziness.
Rodney?
No, not Rodney. And then another producer, or actually set of producers, were very prolific and came up with probably 20 different ideas. Yeah. But none of them were quite, they never really caught, right? Rock Wilder, I walk next door and I hear, and I go, what the fuck? I said, dude, what is this? He said, oh, it's just this concept, whatever. And I said, okay. And I just called Janet right away and I said, okay. I said, Rock's the dude. Listen to this. Right, and he had the kind of the thing, and we put a couple little things on it to make it a little more her. But, and then I gave her, I said, I hear this melody, and I said, but I don't. You can write it, whatever it is. I said, but when you get to the chorus, it should just be whatever you want to do to somebody, right? So if you say, I just want to, and I give her the melody, the rhythm of it, she came back the next day. And I was like, oh, and we were at Record Plant, I think, in L.A. recording this. And she just nailed this thing. And I can't remember who came. It might have been Robin Thicke or somebody was in the studio next door or something. And came in and was like, what are y'all working on? And it's like, oh, we got this new Janet song. Oh, let me check it out. And never listened. It was him and I can't remember who all else was with him. Might have been Jordan Knight. We might have been working with Jordan Knight at that point
give
in time,
it to
right?
You.
Yeah. Give it to you.
That's my jam right there.
Yes.
Yeah.
I cut for that joint.
Yeah. So, anyway, they
wait,
were like,
he wrote
oh
that?
My God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, no, no. So that, no, but that's it. It was just of all those songs, that one is really probably my favorite one of those types of records. That one was just so good. But, man, hats off to Rock for that one, man, because he really brought some. He did exactly what we said. We like you. Do something that's not you, that's her, that, you know, whatever. And he totally
knocked it.
Totally
out.
Brought it. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Jimmy Jam.
Man.
Woo. Man. Woo. Give him something like a plaque.
Right.
But you got enough.
Yeah.
Enough. Thank you. On behalf of Boss Bill, Sugar Steve, Unpaid Bill, Laia.
Yep.
And Fonticolo.
Yeah.
This is a special Meredith Baxter Burney edition of Questlove Supreme. We'll see you on the next go round. Thank you.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off. Starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.